The stock market opened this morning at its lowest point since 1997. The once unshakable consensus in Wall Street's long-term profitability is, well, jello might seem a little unkind, but there it is. Nevertheless, there is no shortage of confident advice in newspaper columns and on cable TV, and Joel Lovell wonders why. After he finished his monthly column about money for GQ, he realized there's a good chance that what I just wrote is precisely the wrong advice. So if you dispense financial advice to clients, as a market analyst, as a columnist, whatever, what are you selling today? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Joel Lovell writes the Money and Men column for GQ. His op-ed, What Do They Know?, ran in Sunday's Washington Post. And he joins us from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks, Neil. It's nice to be here.
And was that a crisis of confidence for you, that moment?
Sure. Absolutely. Definitely. I was going ahead writing what, under normal times, I think would have been fairly sound advice. And then I looked back on it and thought, this could be totally wrong. It's really, really hard to know where things are going. And it made me deeply anxious that somebody out there might read my column and think, okay, well, I'll do what this guy says. He seems reasonable, and then lose a whole pile of money.
The fact is, reasonability, that's consensus, that belief that over the long run, the market has its ups and downs, but that's the safest place to save for retirement, for your kids' college, right, for those sorts of things. Suddenly, that doesn't seem to compute anymore.
Right, right. I mean, and some people would argue, well, you know, we're just in a more scary phase of the phases we've gone in before, but over the long haul, it's still going to – the time-honored principles are going to still be sound. But I think that plenty of other people are questioning that, and with obviously good reason.
And amid your uncertainty and my uncertainty, I don't know where the bottom is. I don't pretend to know. You are listening to a lot of people, though, who seem to have pretty solid, firm ideas on what's happening right now and where to go next.
Yeah, definitely. There's certainly no shortage of people who are willing to stand up and, in voices of utter confidence, tell you what you should do as an investor. And in many cases, there are people who, you know, have been pretty spectacularly wrong in the not so distant past.
In the not so distant past, like last week.
Right.
Well, we've all had our fundamental faith questioned. So do you tell, is your column now saying your mattress is a very good place for your savings?
it isn't exactly saying that, but it could be as good an argument as any other. What I personally am saying right now is not so surprising or controversial. It is, given some things that have happened in the last week, some indicators like the price-to-earnings ratio or whatnot, it seems like a decent time if you're a long-term investor to start to put money back into long-term index funds or into your 401k if you stop doing that. But again, I mean, I say that with a gigantic boulder of salt.
With a boulder of salt, the market's up, but 60 points so far today? It feels like an historic rally after what's happened the last few days. To open at 1997 levels is just somebody who took that conventional advice, not just yours, but everybody's advice 10 years ago is now back where they started.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The last 10 years have been washed away. And in the last few months, plenty of people, I mean, you can cite any number of examples. There have been people saying, well, the bottom's going to be at 8,000, the bottom's going to be at 9,000, the bottom's going to be at 8,500, the bottom's going to be at 8,000. Nouriel Roubini, who is, considered to be one of the bigger cynics out there, has been predicting that we're going to bottom out somewhere around 6,000. But if you think, well, we've wiped out the last 10 years in a matter of months. In 1994, the Dow was around 4,000. And it doesn't seem like it's that much a stretch to think we can wipe out another 26 months.
Thanks so much.
Sorry.
I just got my quarterly statement in the mail, and I'm not opening it.
Yeah. I think you're in good company. A lot of people I know. It feels like people sort of break into two different camps, either those who just are not going to look for a long time or those who are going to obsessively look day after day or hour after hour and chart the decline.
Interesting. The envelope that the statement came in said, take a deep breath. It's still a good time to invest for your retirement.
So
I'm not sure I can breathe that deeply. Let's see if we can get some people on that. Just one point. And you write a column for GQ, which is not necessarily the first place people might turn for financial advice. Might you be allowed a little uncertainty in given where you write and what you do as opposed to somebody who might write for a more focused journal or on a more focused television program?
Yeah, I think so. I certainly hope so. And I've never claimed to be any kind of financial expert. My background isn't in finance, and I never worked on Wall Street. And really, this is a column that's being written by somebody who's a layperson, like most of the readers. I'm not claiming to be deeply studied in economics.
Or deeply troubled, like many of the other people.
Yes, that I can claim to be.
Of your readers. Let's see if we can get some financial advisors on the line and ask them what they're telling their clients, their readers today after all of this dramatic drop in the stock market. Let's begin with Kelly. Kelly with us from Fargo, North Dakota.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Go ahead, please.
All I've been using for the last 5 years with clients is fixed indexed annuities. So whatever their gains were are locked in either annually or maybe every 4 years. So if they had $100,000 in their account last year, they still have $100,000 in the account today.
So your options for growth are limited, but so are your options for losses.
Right. If the market was up 18%, maybe I only made them 12% that year. But I've always said I'd rather have that phone call than you're down 30%.
Uh-huh. And why don't more people do this, Kelly?
I don't know. They're boring. They're tied to 500. You can't fill up 20 hours on CNBC talking about just the straight index. But there are surrender charges. You know, let's say in the first year, if you wanted your money out, you'd pay a 10%, kind of like you would with a CD.
Yeah.
But if you put in $100,000 a year ago and you wanted to surrender your policy, how many people aren't willing to take a $10,000 loss today versus $40,000 loss.
And do you have to start with $100,000?
No. They'll go down as low as $2,000 for IRAs, or usually a lot of them are $5,000 or $10,000 minimums.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Kelly, it sounds like you have something to say when people call up.
All right, you betcha. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the phone call. Indexed annuities, is that something you're familiar with, Joel?
It is. I'm sure Kelly could talk in better detail than I could. What I appreciate about what he's saying is that it's an investment plan that is, by definition, sort of modest and humble and reasonable. And unfortunately, we're now skidding out of a long time that was anything but modest and humble and reasonable. And people weren't so interested in that kind of sort of gentle accretion. Everybody wanted to be as wealthy as everybody else around them.
Let's talk with Michael. Michael with us in Baltimore.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I was just calling because I had a meeting with my financial advisor today, and as a relatively new investor, you know, we had some of these same conversations, and he was saying, you know, it is a pretty reasonable time to get in, but as you know, as your guest points out, who knows what's right or wrong. But I think that if we, you know, we take individual stocks off the table and you think about things in funds and you play your cards right as far as rebalancing your allocations on a yearly basis, that it seems like it is still investing your money is still the right thing to do, not hiding it under the mattress.
And did he convince you?
I think I've done my own. It wasn't that sort of a conversation where he was trying to convince me of that, but we kind of came to that same that conclusion together, and I'm moving forward with that plan. Yes,
and you're how many years from retirement?
Probably a good 30.
Well, that's
I would say
that's sort of amortizing your bet there. You got some time to play with.
Exactly.
All right.
You know, I mean, and the lessons that I've learned on my own over the last year are, you know, that if just sort of managing my own money in individual stocks without really being well balanced or spreading my risk around, mm-hmm. that's absolutely not a good strategy. So I think that we just need to really look at what's realistic and how much return we can get on our investments, not trying to hit a home run every time.
Michael, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You bet.
And Joel Lovell, the experience of people like him, I'm sure that there were some people on Wall Street who heard what he had to say and sighed a huge sigh of relief. But nevertheless, there are a lot of people, a new generation, perhaps, depending on how low it goes before it does bottom out, that may be scarred and reluctant to go into the market for a generation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that's hardest to get a handle on right now is just regardless of how rationally you look at the different indicators and you look at the history of the market and you determine, okay, well, over the long term, this is a good time to get back in. And I might see some losses in the upcoming months or year, but I'm betting on the trajectory to change after that. And so those losses aren't going to completely spook me. Even if you're telling yourself that, I think there's something in most people's gut that's just saying, I just got creamed out there and everybody else around me is getting creamed. And I just want to go away and not think about it anymore and not watch my money disappear anymore. It's hard to fight that instinct.
Yeah, if you're a professional investor, that's one thing. But investing for retirement or college or something like that, it's almost too much. You've got too much at stake.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it becomes a real psychological and emotional question rather than a rational economic question.
Joel Lovell is an editor at GQ Magazine, where he writes their Men Plus Money column. He's with us from our bureau in New York. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We want to talk with financial advisors. What are you telling your clients? I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can go now to David. David with us from Nashville.
Hi.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah. One thing that I do before recommending anything is recommend that we understand, first of all, the client and their needs and their fears. The product I think that works pretty well is a variable annuity that has a rider attached to it. And the rider basically is a guarantee, worst case scenario, that you will get your money back. The ones that are out there vary from company to company. They're very competitive with one another, but one has a step up and lock in when the market moves up. It locks in the gain. That's guaranteed. Others may, and that's done on a daily basis. Others may move it up quarterly or annually and step it up, lock it in. Worst case scenario, they may give anywhere up to maybe 6% compounding. If the market does not perform as well as the 6%, then that 6% might be locked in.
So that's all guaranteed. There's no way you could lose your money.
Well, it's guaranteed with the assurance of the company. Okay. So, but the companies that are offering these things do a very good job of managing their risk, and the fees are doing that. So there's nothing guaranteed. I guess the risk of inflation, as an example, will continue to be with us, so we measure that risk.
Mm-hmm.
But it has the opportunity to participate in market gains while minimizing the downside risk. So it steps up, locks in, steps up, locks in.
Let me ask you, David, is that what you've got your money in?
I do indeed, and my regret is I didn't move it soon enough.
But. Okay, David. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this is another Kelly. Kelly with us from San Antonio.
Yes. Hello.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
How are you?
I'm well.
Well, I manage seven partnerships that developed real estate subdivisions in the exurbs. We owner financed all of our property. We're not experiencing any higher rate of foreclosures to begin with, because I think we did our lending intelligently. But as far as what I'm investing in now, there are a lot of opportunities in distressed real estate, and such as foreclosures and that type of thing. So I think you have to just be prepared to take advantage of the opportunities that you have right now.
And worry about being called a vulture later.
Well, as long as you don't take advantage of people in an unethical manner, you're actually providing a service, because and that's how I approach people.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, I don't string them along and take advantage of them, and you're actually providing a service, and I do try to do it in a very ethical manner, and you're really helping people out in that kind of situation.
So this is an opportunity. Obviously, a crisis in one sector could provide opportunities. When you're saying distressed real estate, these are homes that were developed and then either are sitting around unsold or people can't afford the mortgages?
In some cases, I'm more focused on raw land, but I have done both. And so, yes, it could be raw land, it could be houses, it could be already one that's already in foreclosure, or it could be pre-foreclosure.
And you're not worried that the price of real estate and housing is going to continue to fall?
Well, of course, that is a concern. You have to really evaluate it on a case-by-case basis. Absolutely.
Well, Kelly, good luck to you.
Okay.
Thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Bye-bye.
And as we hear these different options, Joel Lovell, I mean, they sound pretty good. I mean, you know, various things that we can lock in rates. And again, there are opportunities out there. And as you've said before, there are a lot of people who say there's opportunities right now in the stock market, that the price is this low. These are really good companies going at very good values. But they've said that at, as you pointed out, 9,000, at 8,000, at 850, and at 7,000 too.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, and I think I mean, it's one of those things where I think you really do have to seek your own counsel on some basic level and decide, what am I willing to risk? Because everything really is a risk. And anybody who's telling you, well, this is a sure thing or that's a sure thing or definitely do this because this has hit bottom, I think our recent past shows that there's a decent chance they're wrong. So you know, you find somebody whose advice you trust more than you trust others. But I think the thing that we lost sight of in this country for a long time and now is really, really present in our lives is the unavoidable and inescapable truth that any possible gain carries with it the possibility of loss. And you just need to know that going in.
Joel Lovell, thanks very much. We appreciate it. And we'll study your philosophical observations at greater length.
Thanks very much, Neil.
Joel Lovell is an editor at GQ and writes their Money and Men column. He joined us from our bureau in New York. You can find a link to his column, What Do They Know? True Confessions of a Conflicted Money Guru, which appeared in the Washington Post last weekend, at our website. That's at npr.org/talk. Tomorrow, new cabinet nominees, the budget fight gets ugly, and Rush Limbaugh ticks off the left and the right. Ron Elving sits in as our guest political junkie. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Cumin in Washington.